Last week, I had you talk disciple to disciple during the sermon. This week, it is another, as promised, another call of the disciples story. And this week, I want us to do... Oh. Jim, do you know how to turn off the lights back there? Actually, I see Dean moving right now. So Dean is... they will make it darker back there. But while we were waiting for it to get darker, I forgot to tell you to do that. In looking at this text, I realized that there were three types of questions that we could bring as disciples looking at this text. There are the kinds of questions that scholars can answer, things that you may not know off the top of your head, but they can be known, and that there are people who have spent a lot of years studying, and you can look it up in a book and learn what they have learned. Questions that don't necessarily have specific answers like that. You can't look it up in a book, but you can use your holy imagination to think about what could be the answers. Where could the holes in the story be filled in? And then thirdly, questions that help you to see who Jesus is and what that means for us. So we're going to look at each of these types of questions that came from the text for me this week. So the first kind of question are the ones that go to scholars. And as we were talking about this text in staff meeting, it was brought up, you know, what we really like is when you give us sort of the geographical and the cultural touchstones, because those are the things that we don't always know, but we know that there's stuff in the text that we have questions about. And in this one, it seemed like geography was the main thing, because there's all kinds of geography. There's Nazareth, Capernaum by the sea, Zebulun, Naphtali. And anytime you hear the same words in the Old Testament or in one of the other lessons and in the gospel, it should perk your ears up and think, well, I want to know more about that. And so we have that in the Isaiah passage, Zebulun, Naphtali, and you got more geography, Jordan, Galilee by the nations. And so I have some maps. This one is of the 12 tribes. So Zebulun and Naphtali, the shortest answer, is that they were sons of Israel. They were part of the original 12 tribes, and so when the people of Israel came out of Egypt, it was a long journey through the wilderness and all sorts of other trials and tribulations, but then when they came to settle in the promised land, they divided up the land, and so each tribe got an area of land. And so here's Naphtali up here, and Zebulun is kind of squished right here. And this is the Sea of Galilee. The Sea of Galilee is kind of, well, it's a lake. It's less like the Mediterranean Sea and more, well, it's not as big as Lake Michigan. But it's a lake when we think about it. And so it's up north. It's far from the capital. The capital would have been down here. And so it was thought of as, you know, it was good land, it was beautiful, it was well-watered, but it was far away from the seat of power. And also, it was a border country. There were other people from here, it would have been the Arminian. There were all kinds of different armies that would, or just villagers who would come in, and so you were always at risk of having your village raided and having your crops stolen and all sorts of things. It was a borderland, and so there was some danger, some darkness amongst them. And then, at the time that Isaiah wrote, the northern kingdoms had already fallen. They had already gone into exile, and so it was definitely a time of darkness. Isaiah was writing primarily to the kingdom of down here, to Judah. The others had already dispersed. And so naming these other kingdoms, these other tribes, these other lesser-known tribes, and saying that that even there, light will shine. So that's what's going on. And then in the New Testament, we have the same kind of thing. It's up here. Galilee is the same area where Naphtali and Zebulun were. And so this is where most of Jesus' ministry happens. But there's also parts where it talks about where he met a Samaritan. There were all sorts of different things. You have to go through Samaria to get from Galilee down to Jerusalem. Oops. And so there was always contact with the Samaritans in that way. So here's a little bit of a geography. This is just a little bit of the ways you can go. There are all kinds of scholarly books that you can read to learn about details on word choice and all kinds of things. So that's one way you can ask questions of a text. The other way that you can ask questions of a text is to ask questions that engage your holy imagination. In our Jewish siblings, they use the word midrash. There are so many stories in the Old Testament that have big holes in them that you want to say, well, what happened there? What, you know, one that comes to mind is that there's the story where Abraham almost sacrifices Isaac. At the last minute, God intervenes. But every time I read that story, I want to know, what did Sarah know and when did she know it? Did she know that Abraham was taking their child, the child they had waited for so long, the child that she had laughed at joy when she had had and laughed in the face of the angels when they said she would have it? Did she know that this was not a normal camping trip? I kind of think she didn't, and then I want to know what happened when she got back and Isaac told her what happened. I think that's the answer because there's a kind of a scriptural indication that they maybe didn't like keep the same camp after that experience. There's sometimes talk about like, and Sarah was over here in this town and Abraham was over there. So, but there's no description of it. So you can use your holy imagination. Things that we can't answer, but you can ponder in your heart, prayerfully consider, and just let your imagination dwell in the text. God made us and gave us that gift of imagination. So here are some of the holy imagination questions that I had this week. Did the disciples know who Jesus was when he came by, or did they drop everything when the stranger called them? Because I could see it going either way. Jesus had already been in the community. He had been preaching in the synagogues. He had started to proclaim the good news. He had been a wandering rabbi for not a long time, but, you know, word spreads. So maybe they knew who he was. But maybe they didn't. Maybe they'd been spending all their time out in the boats, and they had just not heard about this guy, but there was just something so captivating that they just dropped everything and they went, not having any idea what was in store for them. And then did they feel honored to be called by a rabbi? He's a wandering rabbi. It would be an honor to be a disciple of any rabbi. This rabbi chose us. We're going to go. We were going to go with the first rabbi that offered us the job. Or was there something specifically captivating about Jesus? Had another rabbi been walking by, would they have just stayed in their boats? Did Jesus call all the fishermen he passed that day, or just these two sets of brothers? I have to imagine, so the way it would work is that they would fish at night, and then in the morning they would be cleaning and mending their nets, you know, and getting ready so that they'd be ready for them to go out in the day. I have to imagine that these were not the only boats on the seashore. And I imagine Jesus walking, and so the question is, did Jesus just keep walking and say nothing and just enjoy the walk until he came upon these two brothers? Or was Jesus inviting each and every fisherman that he passed, and these are the only two that accepted the invitation, or the only four that accepted the invitation? And while we're at it, they're both sets of brothers. I don't know. And were there people who were called but chose to stay in their boats? And if so, what was their life like after that? You know, how many times have you been busy doing something? It doesn't even matter if it was even an important thing. Sometimes you're just like, I just want to finish this thing. When your phone rings or your kid wants to talk to you or any number or your spouse or whoever, and you're just like, just let me finish this and then you can have my attention. Or maybe they were just like, you know what, doesn't matter what you're selling, I'm not buying. And then maybe later in life, did they go and check out this Jesus? Were they maybe amongst those 5,000 who were fed and they turned to their buddy and being like, you know, I could have been his disciple. A while ago, I was mending my nets and he called me, and their buddy would be like, and why didn't you go? Who knows? And then this is one I find fascinating. Zebedee is the only other named character that's in this story who is not called to be a disciple. And so I think, what was Zebedee's experience that morning? And these are the three ways that I came up with, but maybe your holy imagination can come up with some more. So my first one was to hear Zebedee yelling from the boat, What am I, chopped liver that my kids ditch me? He was working. Maybe he had just finally gotten things the way he wanted for Zebedee and Sons Fishing Company, and all of a sudden, his kids leave him. They leave him, and the nets aren't even done being mended, so they're not even ready for tonight. Seriously, kids? And then the other way to think about it is, what am I, chopped liver that Jesus didn't call me? Was Zebedee a little bit jealous? Glad that his children were going, but wondering, am I invisible? Why didn't he call me to be a disciple too? Am I too old? Is it something wrong with me to go down that trail? Or maybe it was simply, go with my blessing, children. You have been called to be disciples. Or maybe some of the combination of all three or something else. What does your holy imagination come up with when you think about Zebedee in the boat? Think about times when you have been near something amazing happening to other people, but not directly to you. You can be happy for them, but there can be also some other emotions under the surface. What besides their nets, boats, and father were they leaving behind? We don't really know a whole lot about their lives. We don't have a whole lot of specifics. We know that Peter was married. He's the only disciple that we know was married, and the reason we know he was married is that later on, Jesus is going to heal his mother-in-law from a fever. And the only way I know to have a mother-in-law is to be married. So we know that Peter was married. But we don't know anything about whether or not the other disciples were married, if any of them had kids. There's an assumption that Peter was the only one that was married, but we don't really know. Or sometimes, maybe they were engaged and they were, you know, they had in their mind, I'm certain in their mind, they had a picture of how their life was going to unfold, and that's not how it unfolded. So even if there weren't wives left behind, there was the hope of having a wife and having a normal life where basically they just fished and cleaned nets, and that was their life. And they were about to embark on a much different adventure. Did they realize that they were making a life-changing commitment in that moment? In life, sometimes we know that everything will be different. That we know we are about to cross a border and that everything will be different. There's those big things. When you graduate from high school or college or whatever, you know that life will be different. When you take a new job or you retire, you know that life will be different. But there's also those times in life that you don't realize that you are crossing a Rubicon until you look back and you think, wow, that was the moment when everything changed. I didn't realize it at the time, but meeting that person, that they would become what to you? It's those times. So for the disciples, which one was it? Did they hear this call and know my life is going to be different? I don't know the details, but I know it will never be the same. I'm following this man. This is my life now as a disciple. Or did they set out not having any idea whether this was going to be a short-term thing or they would just sort of see how it went? I guarantee that even if they thought they knew what they were getting into, there was no way that they could fully understand at that point. And I invite you to use your own holy imaginations in this text and in any other text that you choose to read to ask questions that can't necessarily be answered but are fun to explore, to use the imagination and the curiosity that God gave you, to find the things in the story that make you wonder, to find the things in the story that connect to your life, that make you think, well, if I had been Zebedee, this is how I would have felt. If I had been Peter, these would have been my concerns and this would have been my excitement. To use your holy imagination and let questions drive you to that. And then there's the third type of questions. Questions that help us to see who Jesus is and what that means for us. Why did Jesus call these men as disciples? There were, of course, many other people that could have been called, whether he called other fishermen or not on that day as he was walking. The one thing that we know is that Jesus did not wander in to Jerusalem to find the temple Torah study and ask and call the most leading religious scholars of the day. Jesus didn't go and find the wealthiest, most powerful people to get them on his side. Jesus called everyday people, which is what God had been doing throughout Scripture. Not necessarily going to see who was already the best person for the job, but God saw something deeper and further beyond what would be their resume and would call people to do what God was calling them to do. In this case, to be disciples, to follow Jesus, to learn, to sit at his feet, and then after the coming of the Holy Spirit, after the resurrection, to go and to proclaim and to teach and heal as Jesus had done. Jesus called people where they were and then taught them and equipped them for the job that he was calling them to do. What did the disciples witness as they followed Jesus? That sort of the answer is answered through the rest of the gospel as they continue to follow Jesus and they learn more and more about who this is and what will happen. And it is a journey of learning throughout the gospels. And the disciples do not always understand what is happening. There's many stories in the gospels where Peter will say something and Jesus will have to correct him because God bless him, Peter just always says the first thing on the top of his head. He is so impulsive and he will just be the first one out of the boat. There's all sorts of things. The disciples are learning and they're seeing and they're still trying to understand. But in this passage, what we hear is that they are following Jesus as he goes into the synagogues and teaches, as he proclaims the good news and the coming kingdom of heaven, and as he heals the sick and is present with those around. The next couple verses that aren't part of our reading today talk about all of the places, it gets more into geography of all of the places that he went. And all of the places that he went, some of them were good Jewish villages, but many of them were not necessarily just Jewish villages. Jesus was the light unto the nations. And his disciples saw him as he interacted with all kinds of people that society would tell them a good Jewish rabbi would not. Those are some of the things that they witnessed as they followed Jesus. And how was Jesus able to use what they brought with them? So in this text, it talks about how Jesus calls them and they leave behind their, what do they leave? They leave their nets and their boats, right? Think about the Bible stories that you have heard where Jesus is in a boat. There are a lot of Bible stories where Jesus is in a boat. There's many Bible stories where Jesus and his disciples get in a boat to go to the other side, you know, and then Jesus teaches there. Or Jesus gets in a boat to preach from the boat because the crowds are pressing in so much. Or there's the times that they're on the boat and Jesus is sleeping and there's the storm or there's the time, you know, there's all kinds of stories with a boat. And so it made me think that Jesus calls us, and there is a fact that our lives change and that we sometimes leave things behind, but Jesus isn't calling us to reject everything about who we are. Jesus uses the gifts that they had and the abilities they had and the things that they had to offer, and in this case, something that they had to offer was a means of transportation. They had boats. And so their boats were put to good use in the kingdom and in the sharing of the gospel. And so my questions from the text for you are, what have you witnessed following Jesus? In your life as a Christian, in your study of the scriptures, what have you seen and heard that Jesus did? And how can you go and do likewise? And what do you have that can be used in the kingdom of heaven? Just like the disciples, they had a boat. It was a normal, ordinary thing to have, but through Jesus' ministry, it became something that reached other people and helped shape their lives as disciples. What parts of your lives, things that you have, gifts that you have, skills that you have, knowledge that you have, can be used and is being used in the kingdom of heaven? These are just some of the questions that came up for me this week as I encountered this text. I encourage you as disciples to go forth and encounter God in Scripture and to ask questions and to see where God will lead you with the answers.